Blog Talk Radio.
I need to do one thing. Just one second. Okay, I'm back, you guys.
Okay.
I had to get rid of some of my noise in the background. Okay, you guys, I want to introduce to you guys tonight. First of all, I'm hoping everyone had a great Labor Day yesterday, relaxed, hung out with the family, barbecue, the whole nine yards. I hope you guys had a great weekend, period, three-day weekend, actually. And I hope everyone has gotten home safe and sound, with this being the first day of some of you guys going back to work. As you know, on Say Your Peace Radio Network, we talk about a lot of different issues, a lot of important issues. And tonight we have a very special guest, Mr. Mahavier, William Mahavier III, and he lives in Slaughter, Louisiana.
Yes.
Excuse me. And he's on the line. Hi, how are you tonight, sir?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I enjoyed the holiday. I was busy. I was getting ready for the program.
Okay. So what we're going to do tonight, as you guys know, tonight the name of our show is Racism in Louisiana, and we're talking to Mr. Mahavier III about an incident that happened to him back in 1988, and it's dealing with the Ku Klux Klan. So would you go ahead and start telling us what happened, and I'll tell you when I want to flee in there to ask any questions, okay?
Okay, can you hear me pretty good?
Yeah, I can hear you great. I can definitely hear you.
Well, first of all, I'm going to be 50 years old next month in October, and it's an exciting time. After 25 years of fighting the judicial system here in Louisiana, it's about time. Change has come. I live 1 mile away from where the last incident occurred in Louisiana in Slaughter, where the seven people were murdered by a Brett Gerald, I believe it is, the Gaines family.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to know that family because I've been here 1 mile away from that incident and dealing with the same jurisdiction for the past 5 years. But tonight I'd like to talk to the audience and to respond to any questions that you might have concerning a 25-year-old civil rights case that's been on record, been in the courthouse, 10 lawyers, several parish attorneys, councilmen,
judges,
mayors, black and white now. This is not just a all-white crew of people that's doing black people wrong. We have a lot of black leaders, preachers, all of them in Louisiana right here know what's going on. And I'd like to say this to open up, that black people in general in this country have no civil rights at all. The Civil Rights Bill was signed by, I believe it's Martin Luther King and a few leaders back in the 60s when I was a child. That bill has not been in effect at all because I've been here for 25 years. I'm originally from the Cayman Islands. My family sent me here when I was 6 years old to further my education or to get an American education. I lived in Brooklyn, New York for a little while. Then I moved to a place called Mount Vernon, New York. That's where I went to school, and I got my musical background gift, I would say, being around professional rappers like Ron DMC. You name the people from New York, I know them, and I've been around them, and I've had an opportunity to perform with them in my younger days. When I came here in 1984, I arrived here from New York with a radio scholarship, well, a radio broadcasting scholarship. Let me get that straight. I also got a job here in Baton Rouge with a family member by the name of Guy Brody. He was a famous radio announcer from California that moved to the South, and he gave me my first break in the record industry. And he's my cousin. My wife mentioned to mention he's my cousin. But anyway, Guy Brody gave me a job at the radio station, but it didn't work out. And I met my wife, and I went back to the secular life, living just like a regular person, getting a job. And I had a trade of working on cars. And I had planned to go to LSU to further my education again. So I moved into the LSU area. And at that time, I was living in a what you would call a government housing facility behind a major television station by the name of Channel 2, WBRZ. During that time in the early 80s, middle 80s, going into the late 80s, the Baton Rouge Police Department happened to have been in some type of vendetta against the public, because of the fact that one of their officers by the name of Officer Broussard had gotten killed by a young black man back in those days, and they decided, the police department, to take it out on the public. Now, I'd like to say this. It wasn't just black people being abused by the police department. Then it was also Caucasian people. But it wasn't rich Caucasian people. It was poor people in general. When I moved into that area of town by LSU right off of Highland Road, it was July 14th, 8:30 at night. I was out with my friends outside of my apartment. After work, we were drinking a beer in front of my apartment. Now, right on the steps of my apartment, in the parking lot of my apartment complex, and I was approached that evening at 8:30 by a Baton Rouge police officer who pulled into the apartment complex with his security light flashing and looking for people. At that time, there were three other people with me. He asked them to come to the car. And he said, "All you MF niggers, get against the MF car right now, you MF niggers." It's a lot more words he spoke, but I care not to speak about him because he's ignorant. At that time, I was standing in my doorway. And coming from New York, I knew my rights. I knew that what this officer was doing was wrong because no one in that apartment complex, including my visitors, were breaking any laws. So at that point, he looked at me, and I'm a very short man. I'm 5'4", and that officer, that white officer, he looked at me and he approached me in my doorway, and he grabbed me and said, "You too, you MF nigger."
He stereotyped
us, and at that point, he grabbed me, pulled me to the car, and he told me that I was the problem and that the rest of the guys that were on the car can go. The other men that were with me, they were like 6'1", maybe 200 pounds, 6'5", another 250. But everybody was bigger than me. I had a smaller stature of a man. So he decided to use me as an example, put me in a full Nelson. He choked me until I became semi-unconscious. He snapped my vertebrae in my neck. He also ruptured 3 vertebrae in my upper spine. And at that point, another officer showed up. He dropped me to the ground, and I couldn't move. He then ran to my apartment door. And I don't know what he was telling the guys, but according to the record and the testimony, he told them to give him an empty can of beer out of the cooler. So he then approached the car where the other officer was, and they both together stuffed me in the backseat of the car, of the police car. At that given moment, I was kind of semi-paralyzed. The officer then jumped in the front seat of the car, and he backed out of the apartment complex 2 blocks, 50 miles an hour. And as he was backing out of the apartment complex, he told me in his exact words, "I got you now, you MF nigger. I have you now. I have you for open effing container." At that time, he then did not take me to the police department. He took me east the River Road to Nicholson Drive, across the railroad track, onto the River Road, right where they have the gambling casinos now, the riverboats. He took me 2 miles north, pulled over, took a revolver, his silver revolver, out of his holster and put it to the temple of my head and told me to get out of the car and run up the levee. Now, I'll say this. I grew up in New York. I used to be involved in gangs and stuff, and they would always teach you, never get out of the car. So at that point, I was so terrified. There was a moment or two where I urinated my pants. I was so scared because I remember about the Klan and hearing about the Ku Klux Klan, because all the while he was taking me down the road, he told me he was from the Ku Klux Klan. He hates niggers, and I wasn't going to see tomorrow. He's going to kill him a nigger tonight. And that's when I got religious, Miss McCall. I started calling on the Lord. I got so scared. But at that given moment, when he had that gun to my head, there were 4 white kids, children. I guess they were college students at that time in a convertible Mustang. They pulled over and yelled at that police officer and told him, "We see what you're doing." And at that point, the radio dispatcher was calling him, "Where are you at, 21? Where are you at? Where are you at with the prisoner?" So he got angry and punched me in my face and halfway knocked me unconscious and broke a bone in my face, by the way. And at that given moment, he then pushed me back in the car, stuffed my feet back in the car, got back in the car, threw his revolver on the front seat of the car, and he went towards LSU campus. And he kept telling me he's going to find somewhere to finish me off. I'm going to be one dead nigger tonight. So at that moment when we got on campus that night, July 14th, anybody can look it up, 1988, they had a baseball game. And students were everywhere across that campus. So as we approached the end of the campus towards the inner city again, I just got angry with him, and I told him I was going to let everybody know what he did to me. "Do you know who I am? I'm the rapper from New York. I'm going to let the whole world know what's going on down here in Baton Rouge." And I kept telling him, "Look at my face. Look what you did to my face." My face was so bloody, and punched up from him. Till this day, Ms. McCall, I can't even get my arrest photo. And that's a public record. So that's
man.
Our criminal. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
So as we approach the police precinct right there on Highland Road, now I'll tell you one thing. I don't want to break away from the story. If you would go to LSU now on any given night, especially Friday and Saturday night, people out there drinking all day and all night long. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
24 hours, 7 days a week. What happened, they go down in the black neighborhood and want to arrest somebody for drinking. Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm.
In
yeah.
front of your
yeah.
house.
Yeah.
So when I got to the precinct, he got so angry with me, he kept saying, and I kept telling him, I said, I'm going to take you to court for this. I said, this is ridiculous. I never seen nothing like this. He told me, look, it's going to be an effing continuation in that courtroom. He told me that while he was beating me. It's going to be an effing continuation. And Ms. McCall, it's been 25 years they've been continuing my case.
Oh,
they were
man.
Not in court. Isn't that sad? I have
yeah,
records.
That is sad.
I have lawyers after lawyers that were paid off. I have medical records. I have testimony, witness statements. And till this day,
mm-hmm.
the officer never came to court. In fact, 6 months after they got rid of him, that's when they decided to have a court date and claim that they served the wrong officer in city court. When I went to city
yeah.
court, I found out. Now, let me tell you, I was arrested that night, and I was taken to jail and
mm-hmm.
taken to the hospital
mm-hmm.
where they found my bones to be cracked. They found bruises all over my body, blood,
mm-hmm.
you name it, the medical record stated.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, recently, in 2005, I took them to federal court during the Katrina time.
Uh-huh.
I got some advice from some of the people that worked with Johnny Cochran.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me to take this case to the across the street. And they lied to the federal judge, Mr. James Hilburn of the parish attorney, and a Mary Roper, she's now the parish attorney, says that I never had a lawsuit, but the records reflect there is a lawsuit there.
Wait a minute. Stop for a minute. Did you
yes.
say Mary Roper?
Yes, Mary Roper of the parish attorney.
Okay.
Yes.
I wonder if she's related to the Roper that's involved in the Jason Smith case. Go ahead. I'm
most likely, Ms. McCall, all these people are related. These are
related.
Families
mm-hmm.
of related people in the judicial system in the South that continue to oppress the people.
Man.
Their nieces, nephews, cousins, brother-in-law, sister-in-law. Husband, wife teams, if they're not related that way, they're related to some law firm, some big law firm that has authority to settle cases out of court or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I recently was told that in Feliciana Parish, I was told by a white lawyer that told me, please don't mention his name, but he told me that there are only three families in
mm-hmm.
East Feliciana, or in the Felicianas, not East, but East and West Feliciana, that control everything.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, isn't this America? How can three families have to say so over everybody's life?
Mm-hmm.
There is law in Louisiana. There's no law. My wife and I have gone to court, presented the evidence as a pro se litigant on other smaller cases that we have brought to them. And there was no law being practiced in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
No law whatsoever. In fact, they got mad with my wife because we presented the law.
No whole law is being practiced in the courtroom.
You heard what my wife said? Jim Crow
uh-uh.
being practiced.
Jim Crow
that's
law.
Sad.
So right now, Americans need to understand one thing, that our so-called judicial system isn't broken. We just don't have one. There
mm-hmm.
is no judicial system. That's why in the big cities like New York, where I come from, Chicago, all the big cities, the police don't mess with the citizen because the citizens pick up guns and protect themselves, okay, against these type of people. But here in the South, black people refuse to come together. Most of your young black people refuse to get an education. They would rather sell drugs and become a problem to the system and put themselves in the hands of these evil people. These prosecutors, these city attorneys, the majority of the judges are so corrupt that if the federal government was to come to Louisiana right now, I believe we wouldn't even have a court system. They'd have to have court out. Okay?
Yeah.
Corrupt. Isn't that something?
Yeah, that's amazing, yeah. But that's if they want to get involved. That problem is getting them involved. That's the hardest part, is trying to get them involved.
That's right. And as far as the media is concerned, over the years, when from the day this incident occurred to me, no one wanted to talk to me, not even the newspaper, not the media, not the preachers. I was so shocked till I was like, I just gave up at that point in my life when that occurred in my life. I had turned to drugs. I had turned to everything except what I needed to turn to, which was solving my problem. But in 1994, I had a religious experience, and I found myself, the Lord saved me, and that's when I was called to be an ordained minister and a prophet in the land, and the Lord empowered me to speak up, and that's when my wife and I started going downtown ourselves without the lawyers. I have a list of lawyers. It's on my Facebook page and my YouTube. In fact, I'm going to post photographs and names from now on going into this new season to expose crooked lawyers and judges that have done wrong with the record attached to their face so they won't say it's flat. You have lawyers preying on the black community right now. If you don't have any money, you don't get your case solved. You don't get no help. And then they charge so much money to run you away. And that's it. That's with the white lawyers, too, especially the white lawyers. The Christian judicial system is set up that if a black person comes to a white lawyer, that white lawyer will refer you to a black lawyer, and that black lawyer will charge you so much money, you just say, well, I might as well deal with the white lawyer, okay? Because in turn work with the system to keep rights, to keep rape, to keep financial, what do you call that, criminality and fraud against black people. That's going on all day long. They evict more black people out of their apartments than they do white people. That's illegal to throw yourself out in the street. You paid for it, not them. And most of your landlords are doing the same thing. So my wife and I, through this civil rights case that I've had for 25 years, we experienced poverty. We experienced discrimination. We experienced fraud. I've had lawyers steal my money, knowing that I'm suing the police. Because they figure, well, what the police going to do to me? You're suing them. That's the attitude. Isn't that sad?
Yeah, that is crazy.
And then the worst part about it, and you say this is a talk show, the preachers are in on it.
I totally believe it. I believe that.
Yes.
I believe that 100%.
I've gone to black preachers. I've gone to white preachers. I've even gone to some of my Muslim brothers that represent Mr. Farrakhan to come and speak up, stand up, say something. They won't do it. I've contacted the NAACP to come and all they want is my $35, and I don't see them any longer.
Exactly. I did that, too. I denounced mine, too.
I'm not trying to talk right now against everybody, because somebody that's listening say he's speaking against everybody. Everybody is at fault. What I want to tell everybody right now, they better think about their children and their children's babies, okay? Because what this country has reverted to or back to is plain old slavery. When my
sister
and I ride down the highway, Miss McCall, all I see is black people working and digging the road. And all I see is white people sitting in the truck in the air conditioning. And I said, you know what? Ain't changed around here. Nothing has changed. Not one thing. We've gone to doctor's offices. They don't treat us with any respect. When we speak up for our rights, they want us to leave. They don't want us to be a member anymore, be a patient any longer.
Yeah.
The whole system is corrupt. But I've had so many people come to me and my wife over the years for help, and we've done the best we can. But what we try to tell people and teach people is the main thing. Don't break the law. Go home, learn what your rights are. Don't go alone by yourself anywhere. Don't stay out late at night. See, the system is designed that, especially these nightclubs at night, I watch the police. Now, they have a club here in Baton Rouge, got dollar night. That means you get a drink for a dollar. So if you got $10, you get 10 drinks. Now, the police, what they do is they hang 15 miles down the road in each direction, north, south, east, and west. I watch them now. If white people drive by drunk, they don't do anything. But as soon as they see a black person, Lord have mercy, help them please. Sometimes my wife and I have to turn around with the video camera just to make sure there won't be no beating out there, okay? And that's what's going on. And the people need to know. The people don't know what's going on. My wife
needs now,
to
let me ask.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go. You speak. She got shy all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
I'm in agreement with him. Black people don't have no one to speak up for them, and they can't afford an attorney. And the white people know this, because when you go to an attorney, and black people who make a little more than minimum wage cannot afford to pay a white or black attorney $7,000 or $8,000.
You're right.
And the white people know they're not living on a salary like that. So they use that to run you off in the wilderness or to forget about it or just be silent like it was on the plantation. And I tell my husband, I said, if God didn't want a woman to say anything, he would have made her be like a donkey. And we are just like the black people. We are just like we was on the plantation. We just be silent and don't say anything.
But you know what it comes from? You said something that's very important that you said that. When I was doing Louisiana history the other night, and I put up some posts about Louisiana history, you have to remember, I really understand what slave mentality means. When Louisiana's population back in just before the Reconstruction was 46% of the population were slaves. That is a very large percentage of people that were slaves. 46%.
That's a lot.
So you think generational, the slave mentality is what it is. That's what it is. These people, you know, they didn't, you know, nobody showed them how to do anything when they were eventually freed. They didn't know how to do anything. They had to make up and figure out how to do stuff on their own. So when you think about that, a lot of them went back into into slavery because they couldn't survive out there. That's just like you do with your prisoners. When the prisoners see that they can't survive out, they'll do something, violate a parole, probation, or whatever, and they go back in. I had that happen to me when I lived in Tennessee as a correction officer. They would come back in. I'm like, what are you doing back here? Man, I can't do it. I can't do it. Because that's the mentality. So we find ourselves going back to our oppressor. And when you were saying earlier about our blacks really being able to oppress us, you got to understand, there were overseers back in the day that were slave overseers. So their job was to keep them quiet. And if they got out of hand, they went and told the master, and the master did what he had to do. But see, we still got that mentality that, you know, we got overseers. Our overseers are our preachers. To be honest with you, if you look at the way things are, a lot of our overseers are our preachers to keep them in line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's sad that it's like that, but we've got to come out of it because I totally understand the ideal that they go after the poor people. When you said that, it's an example of that. Eventually, Elaine Riddick is her name. She's out of South Carolina. I think it's either South Carolina or North Carolina. When they were doing, back in the early days, they were doing the eugenics. Eugenics was forcibly sterilizing women. Well, they geared toward the black women, young girls, and the poor white people. Because Margaret Sanger, who they call the mother of Planned Parenthood, she said, we have no use for them because they're not educated, almost like they were animals. So we need to get rid of them. We can't let them procreate. And they forcibly sterilized a lot of our people without telling them. The way Miss Elaine found out was the idea when she got married. She already had a son, and she got married. And she was about to, you know, wanted to have another baby. Well, come to find out, when she went to the doctor told her, they butchered you down there. Did you know that? She didn't know that because when she got pregnant at a young age, they're saying anytime you got pregnant at a young age, you didn't know enough, so we're not going to let you keep having babies. So when you said that, that's what made me think about her. They find all kinds of ways to depopulate the earth when it comes to us anyway. You got the Microsoft Bill Gates going over in Africa, which now he's in some trouble because the vaccinations that he was getting, he's killing these kids over there. See, we got to be careful who we follow behind and praise and worship to. And it's scary because we're so lost. We got all these people coming to us with these quotes from the Bible and these books and stuff, and we're not even seeing it's sheaves and wood clothes. I mean, wolves in sheep clothing. You know, and we've got to watch who we believe in, and we got to watch who's guarding over us because a lot of people are not for us. With our same skin color, is not for us. They're not for us, and we have to understand that. Now, another thing, real quick, is the ideal that. The idol that we have so many poor people that can't help. And me and my partner, Brian Coleman, we were trying to get together and put a organization where we can have referrals for people who need lawyers and stuff like that. That's hard to do because we're not, you know, it's not financial gaining for us to do that. We were doing it lots of times out of the kindness of our heart. But we realized that we can't keep doing that. You know, we're helping everybody else, but because they take total advantage over poor people, and they know this. If we could educate, if we could educate the poor people on how to defend themselves, like you and Mr. Gaines get together and sit down with somebody and basically tell them how to go through a case like what you guys have. And tell them the ins and outs, the steps. I think that would be very interesting. So they won't feel, and there's no support group for a lot of the poor people that's in these situations. And it's sad that they're being taken advantage of, you know.
Well, let me say this, McCall. The Supreme Court have passed laws to protect us.
Mm-hmm.
The pro pro se litigate laws are so powerful, they scare the judges and the lawyers up, because if the people were to get educated about their rights, they don't need a lawyer.
That's okay? Right. That's right. Yeah.
The only time they needed lawyers was back in those days, in civil rights days, in the 60s and going into the 70s, because people could not read. We are now in the Internet age where people can read. People can get an education. People can go online and get a degree now. So my wife and I, our goal is to teach the people. We have film. We have a filmmaking gift. We're doing records and stuff, and my musical background, and we're going to work with other people around the world. We're hoping to make a very vast impact, and not just the black community. The Vietnamese community, the Chinese, all the different minority groups are being attacked by these white, racist, demonic powers in this earth right now. I, as a young minister and a prophet, I would call it as I see it. These people are demon-possessed. They do not have the love of God. They are not Christians. Okay, let's get that straight. We're going to be putting what you call documentary tapes together that can teach them step by step, as you said, how to go through these different procedures, when they get in trouble, who to call and who not to call. And like you said, we need some support groups. And I'm hoping that Mr. Gaines and I can come together on one accord and do this, because he's on a mission and I know I've been on a mission. So, and then you're there and there's a lot of other people around the country. I think we all just need to get together and have a big old assembly or some type of get together and bring about change, because there is financial support for some of the things that we want to do, and it don't cost much. I thank God for your partner.
Another thing, too, the Poverty Law Center is supposed to help, and that is a joke, and I'm going to say it like it is. It's a joke.
They're not. They're a joke.
No. When you have Minister Farrakhan on your threat death list, come on. they got him almost like on the terrorist list. You're not doing what – come on. That sounds like you guys don't want us to be – informed or educated about who we are. That's what it sounds like to me. So why would you put him on your list of people that you don't, you know, it's just amazing it's so embedded in everything we do. When we think we're getting away from it, we're actually not. We're actually involved in it. We just don't see it. It's not physical all the time that it's there. And sometimes it becomes overwhelming because we're trying to help so many people. We're trying to do so many. I can't sit here and say that I can help a million people. There's no way I can sit here and say that. I need to take care of the people around me, the people that come to us and ask for help. I need to take care of them first. I can't do it on the bigger, grander scale yet. I'm not there yet. And hopefully before I leave this world, that we'll be able to do that. Now, we went kind of off the track a little bit, but that's fine. I mean, this is a free show. I don't have to, you know, stay on track. But we got the gist of the conversation about what happened to you. Now, let me ask you something. What happened to that officer?
Okay. That officer was fired, and I have all of his records from the police station.
Okay.
The record was given to me after I went to internal affairs. There was a black officer who came out the back door and handed me the file on this particular officer and looked at me and said, "Look, hold on to these papers. It's going to be a long time. It's going to be a long fight." Even the federal court don't know how I got those paperwork on that officer. That officer was fired 6 months after he beat me, and then he went to Atlanta. To Atlanta and did the same thing in Atlanta. His name is Robert Ray. And now he's made it back here in Louisiana, and I believe he's working for the Cross Springs Police Department right there in Louisiana. He's right back where he started. Cross Springs is a known Klan area of Louisiana. So he's still around.
First they put him on death duty.
He never was prosecuted for what he did to me. When he did what he did to me, they took him out of the police unit and put him on death duty. And when they put him on death duty, he was at the prison, at Paris Prison. That's where he threatened and he sexually molested a sheriff deputy. He then turned around and threatened the captain at that time, was Wayne Rogelio, to blow them up. All this is in the record now.
Uh-huh.
We're talking a grown American terrorist.
Mm-hmm. And you're saying right to this day he's still working?
I believe he's still working. I know one thing, he don't have a Facebook page, so he ain't too liked. You can't find him, but I'm going to do an extensive search for him in the next couple of months because I plan to drag him to the Supreme Court, he and his buddies, and the police department, the mayor of Baton Rouge, Kip Holden, knows all about it.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the attorneys back in 1996. He didn't want to take my case, and he wrote me a letter and told me he couldn't do nothing for me at this time. And when he became mayor of Baton Rouge, after dancing three times trying to win, when he did win the mayoral position in Baton Rouge, he got with the parish attorney, James Hilburn,
right,
and had my case thrown out. And I'm going to tell you how he did it. He had someone serve the ground. I mean, at an old address where I lived in the trailer, he served an old abandoned trailer park telling me to come to court, knowing I lived in Zachary. But I found out about what they did, and I attacked their little tactics. You know, they got these little tricks they do in law. But everything they did was illegal. They called it an abandonment order. Judge Curtis Calloway got with the parish attorney's office and signed an abandonment order along with the mayor. They got together just to throw my case out. Because the reason they did that in 2004, they did it in 2004, I found out about it, and I took it to federal court in 2005 and got the case right back on the book. The reason they fight me so much and don't want me to be paid my damages, because of the fact that if a young man like me and my wife get money, any substantial amount of money, we're going to teach the people how not to have to go to court. If our black people will stop breaking the law, there won't be too many judges on the bench. We won't have a bunch of police on the street. There won't be too many bullets being sold. The prisons will become empty. You see what's going on?
Yeah.
They're living off of us. That's what they're doing.
Yes, definitely.
What the majority of the white community is doing is sucking the blood out of the black people like vampires.
Black community.
Yeah.
They're living off the black community.
They're not putting the money back into the black community.
Even during storms, like when they have these storms, the hurricanes and stuff, the white people rush into the black community. They get all kind of grants. They lie about what they did in the neighborhood and how they fixed
That's
it up,
right.
And they get all this.
Because
I go to town hall meetings, and I see how they lie about money. And all they're doing is bringing a curse on their whole generation and this country.
Yep. You're right.
Live off of grit. They talk about it so much in their meetings that you'll get sick in your stomach. That's all they talk about, a grant, 99 years. Least for to get this grant and get that grant. They live off of grants. And for the black attorneys that mothers and fathers slave and clean the floors to get them into school, to put a title on their stuff as an attorney and not turn around and help the color people, well, God is watching you. God is going to judge you.
Mm-hmm.
I speak that tonight as a prophetess of God, that the black attorneys that are not turning around helping their own black people, may God judge them, come on them.
I agree with that. But see, what they don't understand is, what's so crazy is, when they get through with them, they are, if you think about them, you're a nigga too. No matter how many times you dress up, put on the shop, your sharp Brooks Brothers suits, and you shake them hands, to them, you're still a nigga. They don't see you no other way. They don't.
That's That's right.
And they use you against us.
Yeah, they know we are Negroes, but you know what? What it is, they don't want to help their own color people because they know if they help the color people in one area, they're going to get victory in another area. They're going to be afraid to help the color people because they feel they're going to be defeated. So therefore, they continue silent and not help the color people get victory in no area. In their civil rights or constitutional rights, they don't even care. They just be silent and tell you to go on.
Now, Ms. McCall, I want to say this. I know it's on the radio. Now, we're not saying all black lawyers are bad.
The majority. I have heard that's not.
We're discussing tonight. My is the ones I've dealt with, and I have a list I'm about to put out. And believe me, I already have my legal stand, so if they feel they want to come at me in court, I'm ready for them, okay? Because the truth will always stand. You know, facts are facts.
Yeah, I say this one name, Ms. McCall.
Yes, Ms. McCall.
Get in the yellow pages and call your black about your civil rights and see who you what you're going to come up with. Then you tell me, come back and let me know what you find out. You're going to find out that the black people that have put these titles as an attorney on themselves will not stand up for the color people. They will tell you, go somewhere else, go to Atlanta, or go out of the state of Louisiana. You're not going to find no civil attorneys around here. It's very few.
And when you get to Atlanta, they give you another spin around. It's going to cost
Atlanta is one of those states where, one of those cities that they got a sloop full of lawyers, but you're going to pay. You're going to pay.
You're going to pay a lot of money. You got
to
have it.
First of all, you're not going to be able to get there if you don't have the money. So what you going to do, continue to file and suffer.
In Atlanta, I think I called one attorney concerning my case. Now, remember, Ms. McCall, I done did all the footwork, the legwork, the suffering, the discovery, the filing fees. I done did everything that it presented the evidence. Now, I talked to some lawyers in Atlanta. They told me they're going to charge me $100,000 just to come down here.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Why? So that's the dilemma that all black people are facing in America today.
Don't have any.
I'm not the only one.
What we need to do then, we need to do a show on black lawyers. Are there any black lawyers that want to step up and stand out? I think that would be a good show just to get to see who's who.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a good way to find out who's really about taking care of people. You know what I'm saying? I would love to do that. We can set that up. Definitely set that up.
Now, what we're going to hopefully going into the new year, we'll be in a better financially. I'm going to actually start going to small town and, stay there a week and try to get everybody to come. And what we need to do is file a class action suit against of America. I don't think it's ever been done, but we can present the evidence to the government while we still have an American president and present all this evidence, because you got to remember, Ms. McCall, we're no longer living in slavery. We're no longer living in civil rights era. We're in the 90s no more. We're not listening to disco music. Living in 2000, laws that are on the books and some of the things that they practice in the courtroom are ancient. It's time for change. It's time for change.
Well, you know what? With the judicial system, the main person who makes the decisions is the judges. The judges, we've got to get judges in there that are legit. These judges are the main reason why this is such a mess up. It really is. It starts at the head. The judges, the judges are the reason why all the willing and dealing is being done, the mistreatment of the black people. That has a lot, when it comes to the judicial system, it has a lot to do with the judges. It's not all about us doing wrongdoing. Yeah, we do wrongdoing, but we have a right. You have to first find me guilty. And in the meantime, while she's trying to find me guilty by planting shit on me and doing stuff to me, then, you know, it starts at the head, and the head is the judge. We need to get, you know, and Mr. Gaines said something that was so very profound when he said it. He said, you have to understand what has happened in history. When they stopped being, after the Civil War, when they stopped being slave masters, they went into the judicial system. They went to school. They sent their kids to school for lawyers. They sent their kids to school for judgeship. They sent their kids to school for police officers. So they went to another whole level. They went through into the judicial system. And that's what we're dealing with today. And that's not just in Louisiana. That's across the country.
That's
like
right.
That. I want to say,
Mr. McCall, that our judges, now a judge is nothing but an attorney. Now our judges being bought out, and most of our political favoritism, they're taking money for favors. And that's why we're not getting victories in the courtroom, because the judges are being bought out as well as the attorneys
they're,
are.
We've got trouble
in the country.
Huh?
So we got double trouble in the country. Our judges are being paid off as well.
Yeah.
In other words, if a judge knows an attorney that comes in, and whether you right or wrong, the judge is going to take the side of the attorney that they know.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So we get political favoritism in the courthouse. So therefore, they have several attorneys in the Baton Rouge courthouse. Not attorneys, excuse me, judges. They have been bought out, including the one that's on my husband's case. His name is,
Wilson.
Yeah, Wilson Fields.
Cleo Fields' brother.
He's a past attorney. Very robust. Okay.
What'd you say, Ms. McCall? Sorry.
No, that's all right. No. I was just repeating what she said. That's all. Go ahead.
In other words, Wilson Field is the judge sitting on my state, on the state level of my civil rights case. And he only gave me 3.5 minutes to speak in 2011. That's been going on for years, and which was illegal to even be in court because my case was never a case. It was a claim against the city of Baton Rouge. And as I researched the record and talked to people in the community and the legal system, I come to find out that Cleo Fields himself has gotten several. Cleo Fields himself has gotten several cases, one against the city of Baton Rouge for civil rights violations, for $2.5 million, $1.7 million, another one for $1.2 million. In other words, he has his hands down in the pockets of the Klan. He won't speak up for me.
Yeah.
Because if he speaks up for me, then he won't be able to get too many cases because I'm going to go talk to the young men in the community and they're going to get jobs and businesses and they're not going to be a criminal problem to the system anymore. So he really sold out his own people. So has his brother.
Yeah, I heard that.
Oh, it's a fact, and I would tell them to their face. I tell them on a press conference or talk show, it don't matter. I grew up here for 25 years, and I've watched him, and I watched him get in trouble. Even with, we're talking about Cleo, with Governor Edward Edwards when he got caught taking $10,000 under the table right on live TV. Now, these are the type of leaders we have. Go in, supposed to help their people, and get contaminated for a few dollars.
That's right.
Now he's grown. You hear what I'm telling you?
Both brothers grown old,
and recently I passed by his law firm that he had so pronounced and so looking so good on the corner of North 22nd and Government Street downtown. It's up for sale. So guess what? People will put you in power and give you a name for a little while in this country. And I'm talking about the white community because I preach to them the same way. They'll allow certain black people to get so far, and then they'll come against them. And like you said, they're going to be right back, right sitting there, living right next door in the hood with me. Okay?
That's right.
When they get old, and they're going to imprison their children the same way and don't give them any rights. So all I can tell you is that's why the other people in the other countries look over here and they see this country and they see this government and they see black people being oppressed by their own so-called loving brothers and sisters in the white skin in America, and they don't have no respect for this country, okay?
Yeah.
Because I've always been taught by my grandfather to sweep around your own front door.
Mm-hmm.
So when our Congress and our senators wake up one morning and they start treating everybody fair, like Colin Powell said, we all need to go out here and get a piece of this little pie that's out here.
Right, that's right.
But instead of us getting a piece of pie, you know what we get? We get the bread and not even no crumbs on it. They tell us to go wash the plate. That's what's going on in America today, Mrs. McCall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's
it's crazy.
Civil rights and no justice. And there ain't a preacher out there preaching righteousness to their own people at all.
No.
I'm going to tell you like
they're not preaching righteousness. They're not talking about coming together. They're not preaching none of that. They're not interested in people. They're not interested in what's going on. They're so disconnected. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can
hear
you.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
I was saying how it's so disconnected. Now, it might be a few churches that's teaching and paying attention to what's going on. They holler that there's no politics in church. But guess what? Guess who's sitting on the front pews? The politicians. Okay? Oh, you know, there's supposed to be a separation between church and state. That's bullcrap. That's bullcrap.
That's right.
When your mayor can come and sit on the front row, on the front pew of your church, and he put his little money in there, he's doing that for votes. That's what he's doing. He's doing it for votes. So don't say that politics and church don't go together. It does. They're strange bedfellows. That's what you want to say.
I'm still waiting for, I think she's a senator now. I brought my story and my problem to Sharon Weston Broome many years ago. And she still hasn't called me and don't care to call me, okay?
And she probably in church every Sunday
and
the door opens.
All these people go to somebody's church. During election time, they show up and want to vote.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep.
So I'm
about
to call them all out in the courtroom. That's what I plan to do. Bring them all to court.
Yep.
So that's my story. And you have any questions for me?
Yes, I do, sir. Now, we're at the point now where your case has never... So where is your case right now in the court system?
Okay.
Is it still in the court system?
Yes, it is. It's sitting downtown Baton Rouge on the state level without it being ruled on. What they do every time I go to court, they never rule on the case. They keep, they put denied or postponed. When you look at the record, they're always passing over it. They're doing something because if they rule on it, then it automatically goes to the appeals court. Now, the appeals court did get hold of it on the federal level back in 2009. I had three judges on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. They ruled that my case has never been ruled on, so they don't have nothing to rule on. So there's nothing to overturn. There's nothing to move forward. It's just stalemate, which really is a criminal act. When you study the laws and the Constitution, they have violated the main rule that they violated. Come on, Sandy, help me. Due process.
Oh, yeah, due process.
Due process. Right. Every American citizen, black or white, have a due process rule of time limit.
That's right.
That means they must rule on that case.
As far as the Constitution,
they must either charge you or let you go. They must either prosecute you and sentence you.
Right.
Or, as they, our old historians say, give me liberty or give me death.
That's right.
So,
but you got to give judge
something. Corrupt. And mm-hmm. they better pray I don't become the number one judge in America. Okay? Because God can do things. The way the government is going now,
mm-hmm.
the local governments are violating the federal rules and guidelines of running their little areas, like these townships, they're violating federal rules. And I will say that what's going to wind up happening and what is already happening in the white community, because I know a lot of people, the white people in my area do not even allow these local people to rule on their cases. They take their case all the way to Washington. It costs $300. You can contact Washington, D.C., Clerk of Court's office in Washington, D.C., and ask them for a package of paperwork to move my case. That's all you have to do. Say, I want to move my case out of this jurisdiction. It costs $300, and all you need is a paralegal to fill out the paperwork properly.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going on right now. And that's what I plan to do with the case.
See, now, you know what? You just told something that could be taught to somebody who doesn't understand that or doesn't know that. That
okay.
See, that's the kind of information that I'm talking about that we need to be able to give to our people. We need to get together and assemble with people that are indigent people who don't have the finances and they want to learn how to do it. I think it would be awesome. It's not like you're practicing law. You're just giving them an opportunity to go through the process. That's all. You're not practicing law.
Now, there's one thing also that everyone needs to know. Legally, the court system was based on...
Say that again.
The court system was basically set up during... you know, the Civil War period. They had courts and prison to that, which it was basically, you know, land disputes and who had jurisdiction, whether England had jurisdiction over certain provinces, and they were fighting over taxes. You know, who was going to get the money? But now, since the Civil War, like you were speaking about Reconstruction, they set up these court systems to deal with the black problem, because what black people used to do, they used to actually go into these white areas and complain to the magistrate or whoever was in charge of that township. So the government said, no, we're going to get these little towns together. Everybody's going to have their own courthouse, and they're going to resolve the problem.
Yeah, they sure did. Yep.
A lot of people don't know this. That's why the preachers are guilty of treason, and I could put it to them in writing. Anyone that needs to have a case heard in an open courtroom actually can be represented by a doctor or a preacher or a lawyer.
Yeah.
And then people don't know that. That's why my wife and I are such a threat to them, because when we go to court, we make sure we let them know this. And the word that people don't understand is called pro se litigant.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually get your grandmother to represent you in the court of law. Just as long as the representation only means that the person that the judge is dealing with understands what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And what the legal system and some of these shyster lawyers have done have made people think that they really need a lawyer. And when they don't need a lawyer, what they need to do is get together with their neighbors or some young person that just went to school that knows how to read and write, and fill out the forms and show up in court. That's
mm-hmm.
all they got to do. But what
now,
the law...
Hold up. I want you to explain that because I want to put this out. Explain
okay.
to me what it's called.
It's called pro se litigant.
Pro women.
Uh-huh. R-O, and then another word, S-E,
S-E.
Then the next word, litigant. pro se litigant means you're self-representing yourself, or the next word is pro se hoc, which is the same word. Pro se hoc means the person that steps in for you to speak for you. Because I had to do that for my wife's family court.
Okay, hold up. Wait a minute. You're saying pro se hawk? What is that?
H-A? It's H-A-E-C-K, I believe it is. Yeah, you have to look it up to make the right spelling. I don't know right offhand, but I know pro se litigant is P-R-O, then S-E, and then L-I-T-I-M-A-T-E, litigant. No, with a G, litigant.
Mm-hmm.
Not an M-A-T, but a G-A-T-E. Yeah, pro se hawk, you have another person come in representing you now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But you can have an off-duty policeman, a preacher, a priest, a rabbi, a doctor, your grandmother. You don't need a lawyer. See, the legal system is corrupt right now, totally corrupt. Mm-hmm. And people need to know that all they have to do, like I said earlier, is show up in court with the paperwork filed and stamped into the record. And then you have time periods, like 3.5 years, 1 year. You have 1 year to actually file a lawsuit against these police departments or these criminal-type people. You could actually call the police on a lawyer, like a city attorney or something. You can
mm-hmm.
make a police report against them.
Mm-hmm.
You can, there's a lot of things people can do that they don't know they can do. But your main thing is you want to go to the clerk's office and file it into the record and get you a stamped copy. And it's called a true copy. That means this is a stamped, dated copy that I brought this to this clerk's office. I want the judge to see this. The judge is mandated by the federal government to read the complaint. And he's also mandated to do something about it. And people think they have to go get thousands of dollars to go to the courthouse. Ms. McCall, I've been dealing with my own case since 1994, okay, in Baton Rouge. And right now I'm about to bring them to the Supreme Court of the United States of America, where the 9 judges going to hear what I have to say about what they did. And not just conversation like we're having right now, but legal terminology. There's also one more thing people need to know that's listening. They need to go to the local library and go into the part of the library that says your law section, where you can learn the law itself, what the law says. Because the policeman that pulls you over and tell you that you're breaking the law sometimes is lying to you. You're not breaking the law. Okay?
Yep.
I had a police officer pull me over here in between Zachary and Baker. This is a little bit further away from where the Gaines family passed away, and this happened 3 years ago. And it's a dark section between the two cities, and nobody knows the jurisdiction. But the police and the Zachary police had been harassing people and pulling people over in the dark. So I called the mayor up and the chief of the police and said, y'all better stop doing that because I got my video camera. And they stopped doing it because they were violating people's constitutional rights to go home. Because the law says you are not to pull nobody over in the dark. You are not to harass the public. Secondly, you can't pull somebody over for a misdemeanor. You have to pull them over for a felony. And I don't hear about too many bank robberies, okay?
But they pull you. Okay, I see what you're saying, but they still pull you over.
Oh, they'll pull you over. Really, basically, they're not to pull you over to scare you or put you in some type of danger. Like, say you're going down the interstate doing 75 miles an hour. The police not supposed to get behind you with their lights flashing. You can catch a heart attack like that and crash your car, not knowing what's going on. I'm talking about the interstate now. They're to wait and follow you a certain distance. The law says that a police officer when he finds you violating some type of law, must follow you for 1/4 of a mile before he pull you over. And he's to pull you over in a well-lit area, okay, where other people are there as witnesses. When a police officer pulls people over on a lonely, dark highway where nobody is at, believe me, he's up to no good. So the people need to know the law. I work closely with an organization called PoliceAbuse.com. And you can go to that website. It's called PoliceAbuse.com. They have many sites on there that teach you your civil rights. They teach you how to handle when a police officer pulls you over. You are to ask the policeman, look, by the way, I'm keeping my window and my door locked. Could I see your supervisor? They're not to be out there by themselves harassing you in the middle of the night, especially at nighttime. Now, if a police officer pulls you over during the day, you should slow down, get to a place where you can safely pull over. And your first question you should ask him, what did I do wrong? What did I violate? If he cannot answer that right away, he don't need to see your license. He don't need to see anything else. Because if you're not violating anything, you're not breaking the law. Most of the police departments are doing that to people only to ticket people to get money. And that's unconstitutional. Because the federal government, Mrs. McCall, funds the police department. If you were to look up how much money each police department gets, new equipment, medicals, they get everything. And they get a substantial amount of money to support their families. So they don't need to be out there harassing other families. These are the things that I found out through my civil rights case from 25 years ago. I had to learn the enemy, okay? I had to learn the law. And what is the law? What is the written law? Most of the laws that people are in court fighting right now, is they didn't even break the law. They just there. And I'm talking about black people. We need to educate our black people, Mrs. McCall. We need to educate.
And that's why I was thinking it would be great if we could have, like, sort of town hall meetings doing just this, going around, giving this information. Matter of fact, I'm putting this information on my Facebook page.
Right.
As you speak, that's why I kept asking you to repeat, because I want these people to know this, because this information, I had no idea. I really had no idea.
Yeah, We're 100% with you. We're going to be doing this going into the new year, 2014. Right now, we're going through a transition right now, and we're trying to end some problems that we're having with this jurisdiction that the Gaines family is dealing with. But once we finish with these little small fries down here, we're going after the big, okay?
Yes,
because
definitely.
People really need help. There are elderly people being abused by the police department. Let me give you one more thing that's going on that's illegal. These photo machines that's taking your picture and telling you that you're going certain miles an hour, they're really inaccurate. They don't give an accurate speed. I'm going to tell you why. Radar is what the police use to ticket you by, okay? The machines do not use a radar device to ticket you. They use a digital camera that makes a suggested rate of speed that you might be going. I looked all this stuff up. And it has been found to be unconstitutional. Then the next thing is, it's a civil matter. It doesn't go on your driving record. People don't know that. When you get a ticket in the mail talking about come to court, do this and that, it's a civil matter. They couldn't arrest you if you was the worst one, had 1,000 of those tickets, okay? They couldn't do you nothing, okay? The second thing that they're doing wrong is they're violating people's constitutional rights because they should have a sign at least one block away from that machine that tells you day and night that you are about to come into a traffic trap. Because that's what it is, a trap. They even say it on the book that this is a trap. This is a speed trap, okay?
So people really need to understand what's going on with these local jurisdictions and governments that we're supposed to respect. And even the Bible tells you to obey the laws of the land and all this stuff. You know, the Bible tells you. But the Bible also tells you to use your common sense. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody make a law and tell me to cut my wife's head off, don't mean I'm going to go around and cut my wife's head off. It's wrong.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's right.
We're supposed to use common sense. Thanks to my wife. If a law come out and tell her she's supposed to hit me in the head with a frying pan, that don't mean she hit me in the head with a frying pan.
That
is what's going on, Mrs. McCall, right now. People need to be educated on the facts of life. Because most of the police right now, to be honest with you, Ms. McCall, in respect to the police, if they had to chase you on foot anyway, they couldn't catch you. Because they all out of shape, sitting in cars, eating donuts, and drinking coffee all night long. Okay? Beer and McDonald's and Burger King and donuts. They couldn't catch nobody if they wanted to, okay?
And cookies.
And cookies. So everybody to know, you know, we like to have fun educating people, too. We want everybody to know that we are here. And one thing I do, there was a young man down in, I believe it was Metairie, Louisiana. He had gotten beat up by the police, and the lawyers were messing over him, and what they were doing was dragging his case out 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. They were hoping he wouldn't do nothing for 3.5 years. So he found me on YouTube and on the internet, and I told him to go file a simple piece of paper in the courthouse.
Keep his case alive.
So
they
people
go to that abandoned law stuff.
Right, they like to abandon your case.
Say you abandon your case.
That's what these city attorneys do. They confuse the public and the public defender. The public defender no more than the criminal. Okay?
Yep.
That works
for
the criminal.
You're right.
So I told the man, file the paper. Tell them that you haven't heard anything from them in 3.5 years.
Yeah, 3.5 years.
And I want them to get in touch with me and let me know what they're going to do. Are they going to pay me, pay my medicals, et cetera? That young man did that and kept his case alive. Now, I found out, and through him, he told me that the people that heard that I gave them this information threatened me and told me that I better not come to their town. Ms. McCall, I'm gonna go to their town and put my name on my car because I know the law. And I have video cameras. What we plan on doing in 2014, and I hope the law enforcement agency is listening, I hope all the crooked police and all the crooked mayors and different judges and lawyers are listening. I'm going to have everybody with a camera. And we got to mount cameras on our heads to videotape these people doing wrong. That's what we're going to have to do. Because that's how Rodney King won his case. Rodney King died not too long ago.
Yeah.
And most of the California police thought that when Rodney King died, that was the end of it. It had just begun. They killed poor Trayvon and got away with that. But they're now they multiply. There are more Trayvons out there now. But Trayvons with a law degree, okay?
We have
to educate our people. What we're pushing for right now in legislature and what I'm going to be pushing for in the next couple of months, I've got a few friends I'm going to call. We're going to try to go to legislature. I'd like you to be there. Anybody wants to come and join in that legislature so you can hear how the process works. We want video cameras in the police cars. We want video cameras and recorders in the courtroom.
Yeah, the courtroom.
They have something called the court reporter.
They're in the cars already.
But the court reporter.
Yeah, they prohibit any type of camera, and they do not want it in the courtroom. In some courtrooms, not all of them.
Right.
Because when they're filming on television, they're in the courtroom.
Right. Because they don't want people to see the corruptness of going on in there.
That's right. And to be a witness against you.
In other words, the court reporter, she does what you call shorthand, and she also does something called a tape recording. When you call to get information, they give you the runaround, okay? The next thing they do, if you ask for a typed-up document, called a transcript in the courtroom, they write it out the way they want to write it out.
Mm-hmm.
So what really went on in there, you don't know unless you get the tape recording. And
yes.
See, the government is about to come down hard on some of these local courthouses that hide, destroy evidence. There's a lot of
mm-hmm.
that going on every day.
Yes, yes, yes.
And these are the things that's going on. And I say this, that I know speak about my story, but my story is what I learned things in the course of dealing with my case.
Mm-hmm.
And with other cases.
And with other cases. We have a lot of different people over the years that we, my wife and I, as just people, we're no special organization. We don't have any special title. We don't have a big building people come and assemble with into, but we will one day. There are plenty of hotel rooms and hotel places, what you call them, assembly halls in these hotels. We plan on traveling across the United States and educating the people that need to see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, you guys. Go ahead.
No, we're listening. We're listening. We plan on, right now we're in the process of getting ready to go into the studio and finish up a gospel album and some other things that we've been doing and put them out so that we can have a voice in the nation and around the world. We've been in touch with other people around the world about these problems. And I thank the Lord for you, and I'm going to ask God to bless you and your program that it would reach around the world because we're not the only people going through this.
That's right.
Yes.
It's like one last piece.
I got a question for you. Now,
okay.
You said, let's talk about a part so that it can connect to who you are. Tell us about your music career. And I'm saying this for a reason. I want them to know about your music career.
Okay. My mother died giving birth to me in 1963. God bless her soul. And I was born in the Cayman Islands. When I was born, I came into this world without a mother, and I was passed around through my whole family. But I had an opportunity when I was 6 years old to come to America to live with my father. And I wound up coming to America when I was 7. I became an American citizen, and it was my mother's dream and wish that I would get involved in music. Be going to New York, I had an opportunity to grow up in Brooklyn when I was younger. By the time I was like 11, 12 years old on, I had an opportunity to live in Mount Vernon, New York. That's where Heavy D went to Mount Vernon High School. I also worked in the same studio, recording studio, with Ron DMC. I was in a group called Sky's the Limit. I was a background singer. And at that time...
Oh, I remember Sky's the Limit. Yes!
That's a long time ago.
Hold up.
And back then, I was doing background work for them. And we would just do a few shows. But I would come in the studio and perform. And then the other guys, the rappers, would come in, so we would meet each other. So by the time I was 14 years old, I had an opportunity to be a roadie. That means I would go to the block parties in New York, Manhattan, Bronx, where they would put up the big speakers, and I would have an opportunity to rap with some of the greatest rappers in the world today. But when I turned 19, I decided to leave rap alone. At that time, because it had gotten kind of ugly and violent, and New York was very, it was just hard back then to survive. So I wound up going to radio broadcasting school in Manhattan, New York. And from there, I came to Baton Rouge at the age of 19. I met my wife a little while later. I had a broadcasting degree. when I got here to just do a few hours. I wound up staying. I then worked for a radio station called WTKR with my cousin Guy Brody. I didn't like it too much. It wasn't enough money, so I went back to the secular life and fixing on cars and rapping in the club. And from there, I believe by the year of 1994, after the incident occurred with me with the police beating, by 1994, I had an out-of-body experience, and I got called to preach the gospel. According to the Bible, I became born again, filled with the Spirit, and that's when the Lord gave me discernment to see those demons downtown in these courthouses and the wicked police for who they really was, and to look at society for what it is, a plantation. And from 1994 on to this day, my wife and I have been working on my own civil rights case, and we've gotten at least 100% further in the case than all the lawyers put together in 100 years if they had the case.
Man. Now, how long has your case been on the books as of right now?
You look, 1989, I filed the case. So 99, 2009, that'd be 20 years. You got 2010, 11, 12, 13. So you've got 24 years. This year will be 25 years. This is my anniversary.
And
they've violated every law. Now, as far as my music career, it took a turn in the past, I believe, since Katrina.
In 2005.
Right, in 2005, I picked up my music career again. I decided I was going to rap again. I was going to go ahead and start doing gospel rap. And I had an opportunity to work with the New Orleans people with a company called NTI out of Chicago, who has a Hollywood production company. And my wife and I were blessed to put a song together called Katrina Dream. Katrina, we're going to go ahead and do the video this autumn, going into Christmas. We're going to go to New Orleans, and we're going to play the piano at the river and just do the whole video. Because we had to wait for the tragedy. And at that time, I'm going to make my way to Jamaica. And I plan on working with some of the artists there in Jamaica and move on up the East Coast and travel and put a record out that's going to win the kids over. So I'll have an opportunity, Ms. McCall, to speak to the young people. Some of their civil rights. And history, because a lot of history is not being told to these people. These young kids don't even know. I asked a young man the other day that he didn't understand slavery. He said he don't know nothing about that and walked away from it.
And
it hurt my feelings, but that's life.
Yeah, and he don't want to know.
Well, when we come to Alexandria, we'll bring the keyboard and we'll give y'all an example of what, especially my wife, she's a great singer. She just loves to sing. She's shy, but once she gets playing.
We got another caller, you guys. Hold up. Let's see.
Okay.
Good evening, 318. How are you?
Hello.
318.
How are you?
Yes. I'm fine. How's everything going?
Well, this is everything's been going okay. This is Willie Joseph from the Jackson Parish area.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. I just was able to get in.
Okay,
Mr.
Javier, this is Mr.
Yes.
Joseph. Are you familiar with him?
I'm not. Never met
him. Okay. This is okay. You know, we have been talking about the case up in Jonesboro with the mayor.
Okay.
Okay. This Mr. Joseph is the guy who, he's actually the campaign manager for the mayor, and he overheard the banker, and he was talking to the sheriff, I think. You can correct me.
No, he was talking to the ex-mayor. He was talking to the ex-mayor of Jonesboro, Don Esmeyer, and DJ Allen is the senior vice president of Jonesboro State Bank. And at that time, they made a threat talking about if we would put a bullet in the mayor's head, we would have problems with him right now. And because of that, I was incarcerated and the judge is trying to give me 30 days. I'm out on appeal right now, and he give me a lot of fines and 1 year probation. I'm out on appeal, pending a writ to the Circuit Court of Appeals.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Where so Jones? I mean, that's just by me hearing the threat.
What was you asking?
Where is Jonesboro located?
In Jackson Parish, we between say Winfield and Ruston.
Okay, I'm gonna write that down. I might have to come out there and visit with you soon.
Okay, that would be great.
That would be great. Mr. Mohair, he is in. He goes to court on September the 6th. Right now, Mayor Thompson is in court right now. We went a couple of days and sat in the courtroom with him. So he's in the courtroom now. That's the trial that's going on now. They're trying to get him on 3 counts of malfeasance, and he's the first black mayor they had in that in Jonesboro area, and he's on his second term. And they're doing all they can to get him out before his term is up.
Is that a predominantly Klan area? Has there been any Klan activity?
We got a text tonight that the Klan is meeting in this area because there was some threats that was made upon the mayor's life again. They had some of the KKK that was carrying weapons in the crowd and all, and the police was notified about it and all. So they're trying to do intimidation also. And
did you call your local army base about this situation that's going on? The local army base. They have army bases all around the United States. When you get up in the morning, I want you to find out your local army base.
Yes, sir. We do have that, and we have a lot of the sheriff deputies here in Jackson Parish that's trying to do all they can do to try to get people to provoke them to try to do something where they can start making arrests. They can try to do something to hurt the black people. Now they even have the president over the Jackson Parish police juror. He expected them to turn on the sprinkler systems outside in front of the courthouse. And what that does, that wets down the whole front of the courthouse, stop anyone from actually standing outside in front of the courthouse. That's something that'll bring you back into times where they used to take fire hoses and spray you down and all.
Have you videotaped any of this? Have you taken any still
shots? They have been doing videotapes of different things. They are the judge is sending out some random orders. They are even subpoenaing people to court that they're not going to use. They are giving them subpoenas to keep them out of the courtroom because they feel like that person is an intimidation to them and all.
Yeah, Dr. Miller was not allowed in the courtroom, and he's very influential. And they told him, they subpoenaed him and told him, said he was a witness, and he has nothing to do with the case. They didn't want him in there because of who he was.
That's right.
Now, and I want to ask you one more time. Have you National Guard or your local Army base?
No, sir. We have not called the local Army base. We have not done that. But what we have done, they have been talking to the media. I have been talking to some of the people because there a lot of the Jackson Parish Sheriff deputies are being very biased. They're doing all they can do to actually hurt some of the people. And what I'm doing, I'm actually, kind of stepping in the middle, letting them know you're not supposed to do that. And see, they don't like me because I'm an ex-police officer. And, when I studied law, I studied the real law, not the little made-up law they go by up here in the Jackson Parish area.
So I want you to do me a favor. When you get up in the morning,
I want you to call the local. I don't care how far away they are. They could be 100 miles away.
They're right in town.
You call them, and you tell them that you want to speak to the commander in charge. And
yes,
you tell
sir.
To issue an order right now for military, for the military to step in because it's out of hand. And also, I want you to contact the National Guard, and I'm going to do the same thing. Because, see, when you have local law enforcement agency out of control like that, that's time for martial law. You understand? Before somebody gets hurt down there, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm going to look on the map tomorrow. If I can come down there September 6th, I'm going to try my very best to come.
Lord,
if the Lord wants me to be there then, but I didn't know this was going on too much.
You were dealing with your own situation, and you're helping Mr. Gaines, you and Mr. Gaines working together. So, you know, y'all have y'all. This is why we're saying these are the things that are going on that we need to come together on. These little small towns that are catching hell with all the racism that's going on. And being knowledgeable of what's, how to handle it, it's even much better. I mean, it's great to be able to know how to handle it.
Has any of the
officers
got involved?
Yes, you have a lot of the deputies that's trying to provoke people to do something. And I'm letting the deputies know you're not in the parameter of the law. You're not supposed to be doing those things. You know, you got some that's trying to talk to people like they're crazy, and they complying with what they're saying, but it's the way they're saying it, and it's the way they're trying to provoke them to say something out of the way to them. To say, hey, they threatened me, well, then they give me the right to use force up against them because they threatened me, you know. Mm-hmm. And so those are some of the things that we're doing right there. And also, when I was down at the detention center for the 15 minutes, I was put in by a civilian at LaSalle Management Correction Facility right here in Jackson Parish. And that was unheard of, a civilian actually arresting another civilian. And I got assaulted, and I told those deputies that I was an ex-police officer, I worked some high-profile cases, I'm not supposed to be put in a general populated area, and they done it anyway. Not only did my civil rights was violated, they even violated me because as I was coming in, they called me a crackhead and a motherfucker repeatedly. That's what they kept calling me. And I've been married to my wife for 16 years. I have 4 kids. I work with various people in the community. We always trying to help people. So that was a white deputy that stepped up and told another white deputy, I know this man. He's a real good man. Please stop attacking this man. He made the statement to that deputy that the police chief, Wes Gordon, told him to attack me. Because I know a lot about what's going on with the banker and all. And the police chief kept telling me, don't say that about the banker. Don't say that about the banker. Because they're friends and things like that. And so I got attacked. I took it to the sheriff with a complaint. The sheriff said he took it to the DA. And the DA said he's not going to pursue that because he don't want anything else. So the sheriff didn't do his job. And the district attorney didn't do his job, and the different charges that's coming up on the mayor is like a bunch of lies. It's going on a fishing expedition.
Okay, did you you say the media has done stories about it down there?
Yeah, it's on the website. It's on the website. You can Google his story. You can go Mayor Leslie, the word L E S. L.I.E. Thompson of Jonesboro. It's all you can't miss it. You can't miss it. It's all over the internet.
Oh, all over the internet. What about the local media station?
Yeah, KNOE Channel 8 is there. They're there every day. Yeah.
Oh, is there every day Channel 8?
Yeah, but Channel 8 is on the side of but they're on the wrong side. There might be. I won't say that they're not telling the news like it's supposed to, but they're in a position where they have orders to do whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Well, see, that's why we're going to get our own news team together for 2014. It's best to have somebody that's going to tell it like it is, okay? That's why I see the broadcast degree I have. We're going to have to get these stories out there. But I want, like I say, again, get up in the morning, call the local Army base, okay, and let them know that the local law enforcement agency is out of federal guidelines. That means they're breaking the law. You heard the helicopter? That's, sorry. Oh.
What is that noise? Ah, it's killing my ears. What is that?
I had a helicopter pass over my house. They're probably listening to me.
No.
They watch. I live in the woods. They couldn't land the helicopter over here. They want to anyway.
And that's like me myself. I live in the woods, but there's like strange activities going on in different places. Whites are really now trying to mobilize because the defense team on the man side that has been really hammering the witnesses and all, they are doing all they can to do some intimidation to others, you know. And they even stopped the mayor's son from coming in the courtroom. They give him a subpoena because they say he's a witness. And on both sides, they did not subpoena him on anything. That's just a way for the judge to actually say, you trying to intimidate witnesses and all, trying to do all they can to suppress people from their rights, you know, and that's not right. And so, like on today, they had various people wearing, various that was not in uniform, but walking around with guns and all, and that's not right.
What is that noise? Is somebody close to something?
Oh, that's not me. Yeah.
Okay, can you hear? Can everybody hear what I just said?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I can hear you.
Okay. Because all of a sudden I couldn't hear everybody.
Well, there's this airplane keep flying over my place.
Oh, you know what? That's probably what's interfering with us.
Yeah, airplane. And I don't know why they're doing it. This is the second, the third time. They never did that before. Like I say, there's a lot of people trying to stop the people with a voice in this country, but I'm going to tell you right now, don't worry about it. God got our back.
Yeah. If you're doing the right thing and you're doing it for a right cause, you're right. Well, you guys, I want to thank you. I want to thank the information. You guys have to come back on, Mr. Mojavier, because you have a lot of information, legal information, that I would love for us just to do a show on that. And I told Mr. Gaines the same thing, that if you need room to come to do a show, you can do your show on here and just basically get people educated. You can get them educated on the Internet. You can get them educated any kind of way you need to. So my thing is... If you need some time to do that, just let me know, and I can hook you up. And all you have to do is get your audience. Get your audience to listen, and we can do it that way, okay? I want to thank you for your story. I want to continue. You know, I want to work with you on a lot of things. Me and you have talked off air, and
right.
Great conversations. And eventually, everything that needs to happen is going to happen. With or without us, it's going to happen.
Yes.
We have to work together on it, period. I want to thank Mr. Joseph for calling in. And you guys got a chance to talk. You guys can also exchange. How could we get a hold of you, Mr. Mojavier, if we wanted to either write to you, email address, call you, if we needed extra information?
You can call me direct. Anytime at 225-326-9891.
Mm-hmm.
That's 225-326-9891.
Mm-hmm.
And you can definitely reach me on my Facebook page at William Mojavier III. Mojavier,
okay.
So M as in Mary, O H A B-I-E-R. In fact, I'm the only William Mojavier on in the world right now.
Okay. Okay. And tell your wife I want to thank her for chiming in and giving us good information. Thank you very much. Mr. Joseph, you know, you're welcome.
Yep.
Mr. Joseph, you know we're going to be connecting with you. Matter of fact, when I get off here, I'm going to call you because I want to get some updates on what's going on up there, okay?
Okay.
So I want to say good night again, you guys. Thank you again, and I love you. Bye-bye.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Bye.